This is Fed Up, the podcast by Falcon Nutrition, and I'm your host, Jason Falcon. This podcast will feature coaches, current and former clients, industry colleagues and peers, as well as a handful of others that we feel will bring value to your life as you continue on your nutrition journey. Enjoy, thank you for listening, and let's have some fun.
Katie, I don't know your approach. Most people, when they ask me how they should handle vacation, I tell them to treat it as go away and make it your goal to come back either having maintained or, but you know, be within like 1 to 3 pounds of where you left, especially if it's like a week or 10 or 14 day vacation. Don't go trying to lose. You're going to ruin your vacation. There's another one liner for you. What was it? Vacations ruin diets and diets ruin vacations. Don't do it. Like live your life when at home in a way that means you can go on vacation from everything, including having to care so much about this. It's just not the time. Anyway, go ahead.
I was going to say, so you asked me like how I approach vacation with my clients, and I used to approach it with like, here are the tips that you should do or you can do, right? Now I approach it with how you want to feel while you travel and how you want to feel after you travel. Yeah. And if you do want to feel your best, and you know, it really depends on who I'm working with, right? And their goals. But if they want to feel their best, then we go over habits about, you know, and behaviors of what they can do to feel like you're crushing it even on your vacation. Yeah. Do I always recommend that approach? Not really, because I think vacations are more about experiences than they are about making sure you're hitting your numbers and, you know, avoiding alcohol and all the things that we're doing while working together. Yeah. That being said, if you are traveling for work, that's a whole different ballgame, because we're talking about vacations that are, you know, like a couple times a year, and usually with our family or with our significant other or with our friends. When we're talking about work traveling, it's usually more often, and that's where we're gonna stick with a plan. But yeah, I mean, like, even just thinking through their vacation and like identifying like three or something habits that they can still implement, like going on walks, you know, seeing the sunrise, seeing the sunset. And then, you know, like based on how they want to feel, just preparing and planning for that.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, I think especially how you feel coming back. To me, there's no worse feeling, because I've been at this a long time. I've approached vacations every way possible, and there's no worse feeling. And that's kind of what leads to the advice I usually give them. You know, how do you want to approach it? Like, what are your goals for yourself? Because that usually turns into, if you want to go and hold yourself to a higher standard, do that. If you don't, don't. But don't start in one mindset, because there's no worse feeling than, oh, I'm going to go, I'm going to be so good, I'm not going to cave for anything. And then on night one, you cave for this thing that you had no intention of caving for, whether food or alcohol. And then you're not even a day into the trip, and you're already mentally beating yourself up, feeling like ashamed, feeling like, I've got no discipline at this point. To hell with it. The next 6 days is just going to be absolute gluttony. So like, mentally figure out what mode you're going to be in, and just be intentional. If you plan to enjoy it, if you want to eat 2 ice cream sundaes every single night, cool. Give yourself permission ahead of time. Don't go in saying you're not going to, and then become the 2 sundaes a night person. And then it's like mental warfare for the whole trip. And then you come back, you ghost coach. 6 months later, you're like, listen, it's been rough, you know? So like, figure out where you want to be ahead of time. Where I was going at the very beginning of this is, because we were talking about enough versus too much. I think that's super important. If you can just keep that line of thinking in your head, I think most people can go on vacation, not track, and simply think about, have I had enough? Or is this like encroaching into too much, whether it's food, whether it's alcohol? If we're thinking like mature, wise adults, we can probably figure out where enough is to satisfy. versus where too much is. And I think most people can differentiate that for food and alcohol. It's probably going to be relative to the amounts that you're taking in at home. If you don't drink at home and you go and have 5+ drinks per day on vacation, you're probably going to feel like absolute crap. Alcohol is different. I think it's a slippery slope for many because you can go in saying, all right, 1 or 2 per day, I got this. Never. And then it
all inclusive resorts. And
yeah, I got to get my money's worth.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
12 mudslides per day.
Drinking packages. Exactly. You got to make sure you're getting your money's worth.
The bubbles package on the cruise. I get it. The cheers package, whatever it's called. But like for food, especially knowing how things are plated when we're eating out, I guess this is just going all over the place, but like, look at when you go to a restaurant and you order anything, what your plate holds when it gets to your table is probably like 3 to 4 times the portion that you would actually prepare yourself at home. Vacation, maybe even more so. So again, like aim for the right amount. Is it enough for you to maybe wait a few minutes, leave the table feeling very satisfied, but not gross? Or are you consistently going into like the too much territory to where you just feel terrible? I think most people could make it a lot more complicated than that. But if you just think about enough versus too much, it's usually really helpful. It's usually what I use when I don't track on vacations. I just think about those two things and where the fine line is for me. What is the other question? And these are kind of just like rapid fire, totally different questions. Before I move on to the next, is there anything else you wanted to add to that one? I'm talking way too much, Katie, like I always do. I'm sorry.
No, I agree. I think, okay. I mean, it's so individualized, but I think, you know, just going back to what I said is like how you want to feel while you're away, is, you know, the approach.
All right. So next question. Laura asked this. I need to tag Pam in that post, but we're going to answer it. And your thoughts, you know, obviously welcome too. It can be interesting for people to hear sort of two different responses to the same.
Yeah.
So Pam asked, I'd like to learn more about how to time meals with workouts and how much that matters on our journeys. You want to go first? Do you want me to go first?
I like to think that it really depends on the total nutrition that you're having throughout the day. And, you know, are you in a training? Are you like thing? It really can be individualized based on that. You know, for my cyclists and for my marathon runners, if they're training for specific runs or specific events, then meal timing can, you know, be beneficial for them. But if we're talking about, you know, someone who's just trying to be healthy, change your lifestyle, change your habits, then I don't think meal timing is a priority.
Yeah, I would agree. I think most people start with things like meal timing. Knowing Pam's context, because she's low-key like one of my favorite people I've ever worked with. I don't work with her now, but she's been around a long time. I'm not currently coaching her, but I know like athletically what she does. She has become a big fan of walking and hiking, and I love it. For someone like her, I don't think it matters near as much as someone, to your point, like a long course endurance athlete.
Mm-hmm.
That said, knowing that she has the fundamentals in place, I do think it matters enough for her to probably put time and energy into working it. And that's sort of the idea, is like you check the boxes and you go to the more advanced things. Don't start with the advanced things. So right. She's got all the, you know, elementary boxes more than checked. So even if it's not going to be as, you know, tangible a difference as like a, you know, really, really long course endurance athlete doing hours on the bike and then hours in the pool and hours, you know, running, it's still worth, you know, I think adjusting for yourself to see if you do feel a difference and then figure out if it's worth, you know, the mental energy. But Pam, my advice for you is going to be very similar to what I posted for Laura when she asked. Good rule of thumb, in my opinion, would be, you know, carbs are your body's preferred energy source. So carbs before your workout and then carbs and protein together afterward. Really good for recovery, both to replenish your depleted glycogen levels and then to also help your muscles, which have just been broken down through the workout, and help to, you know, kickstart muscle protein synthesis. So carbs before, carbs and protein after. As far as how much it matters,
so individualized.
It's so individualized, and nothing matters more than your energy balance. You can be the best ever at meal timing, but if your goal is to lose and you're consistently finishing in a surplus, meal timing is basically moot. So again, Pam is really, really good at you know, everything leading up to this. So I do think it's worth, again, carbs are energy. Remember, fat usually helps us feel a little bit fuller because it digests slowly. So those are skills that we do want you to learn and keep with you. So I don't like to just say like, oh, that doesn't matter enough. Don't worry about that. It's just minutia. It'll matter eventually. And I think Pam's at the point of it mattering. So yeah, play with it a bit. You may feel strength differences. You may feel energy differences, you know, timing your carbs and then your carbs and protein after. More than likely you will, especially depending on the intensity or the duration of the workout. It's tough to answer that one in a very broad stroke because I knew who it came from and I know her context, but I will bump that post to the top that I put, that I replied to Laura with, because that was kind of a good general response.
And so, I mean, we haven't, no one's asked us this, but another question that I know has come up when I've been coaching is, does it matter if I eat three meals and two snacks, or do I have to eat three meals in a day?
Yep.
And I mean, from my take on it, and I'm interested to hear yours as well, because we're talking about meal timing. I mean, I think it's just a preference. For me, you know, I like to have snacks.
Yeah, I'm the same. I mean, it's a preference thing. It's not really going to, there went everything on my desk, onto my dog. Total daily numbers are like 99% of the battle for most of the people.
Right.
What I tell people is you could eat all of your food at 10 p.m. every single night, or all things exactly the same numbers wise. You could spread that out over eating every 90 minutes. And over the course of both approaches for 3 months, your results would be pretty darn similar. What that doesn't account for is how you feel, and how you feel is going to play into your adherence. If you know you're a grazer, don't try to eat three square meals and then just hold strong. Set yourself up for more, you know, more often meals that are going to have to be smaller to fit the same budget, and really try to space out your protein. Anything you can do to improve your adherence is going to help you. In that context, I think meal timing is something that most people should have an eye on. If you can adhere better, your total daily numbers are going to be better. Knowing that total daily numbers are 99% of it, mm-hmm. I think meal timing does matter for many. So when we try to downplay it, it's because some people get so wrapped up in meal timing that they give zero thought to their actual total numbers, and they end up on the wrong side. You know, they finish in a surplus as a result.
And it goes back to what you said, you know, start with the basics first, and then over time, you know, you could individualize it to your preference. But
yeah,
I mean, if we're starting with meal timing, we're missing out on the basics.
Yeah.
The meal timing is not part of the basics, you know.
Yep.
Total calories throughout the day is honestly basic, like step
yeah.
one.
Yep. Agreed. I think having some semblance of a game plan with how you're going to split things up, which is why we're big on planning, like you have to be intentional. Most people cannot accidentally arrive within 50 to 100 calories of their numbers every single day, or within 5 grams of their protein accidentally. Like you really, really have to be intentional.
I have been working with clients for, oh my God, Jason, it'll be 3 years in December. That went fast, right? Remember that email that I was like, you should hire me? That was almost 3 years ago.
Who?
I don't think, I mean, I've worked with a lot of clients. I don't think, I don't want to say never, but I don't think, it can't come to mind of one person that has been tracking throughout the day and has hit, you know, all their macros by accident.
Yeah.
Had to take some planning.
And not even like perfectly, but I would say like, even within like 5 grams, it's too improbable, because there's,
yeah,
you know, it's just way, way, way too easy to finish much further off than we think we are.
And that doesn't mean that you have to, you know, track every single thing, but even having the same meals, you know, on rotation, so you kind of know their you know, how much protein is in it, that can be enough. So it doesn't have to be really detailed. It's just the idea of some planning, some, you know, effort.
And so when you get into planning, by default, you're sort of already working on your meal timing because you're choosing when your meal timing happens, if you're planning. The thing that I would say, and this is a post I'm going to make soon, I think the biggest reason that people overeat is because most of the time they undereat. So
yes, I
when
agree.
People are eating late at night, like 9 times out of 10, they are probably targeting total numbers that are too low. And so with that, they're eating very little during the day. And then they're eating, you know, after dinner, probably like the hour before going to bed, they're like, dude, I'm still hungry. I'm just going to have a little something.
Exactly.
And then they have all the something and they go
handful
way
of
over.
Nuts.
Yeah. So most people overeat because they just chronically undereat.
And that can be seen with like going over on the weekends as well. I mean, that's its own other topic. But, you know, if you're constantly under eating during the week, the weekends are going to look like you're burning down the house because you've been so restrictive during the week.
It's the same thing. Like
same
the weekends, in my opinion, like Saturday and Sunday are to the week what 6 to 9 p.m. are to a single 24-hour day. It's like
in
the
concept.
Final part of this thing. And you're just, you think you don't have discipline, but really you're just physiologically very hungry and mentally very hungry because you've been actively saying no to this thing that your body's been craving and needing all day long. It's tough.
Exactly.
So Pam, hell of a response to a pretty short question. hopefully you've
learned
some stuff
from
that.
Three other topics.
Yeah, that's all right. And now my glasses are below my desk and so I can't see anything, but where is the next question? Matthew with the banger. I'd like to hear about transitioning from weight loss to maintenance and how to effectively maintain weight loss.
That's
I don't
its
know.
Podcasts
that's
as well.
Own podcast. Everything matters. Everything that brought you the progress was the cause in a cause and effect relationship. A lot of people set out thinking I'm going to get there and then it's smooth sailing from there. You have to stay doing a lot of the same things. The amounts will change. The amount of effort needed will probably change because you will have gotten proficient at a lot of things. Like Katie, what do you see? Because I am again talking too much. When people regain after they go off, well, one, most people don't stick around for maintenance at a great disservice to themselves. And that really stinks because that is the most important phase to learn because it's where you should be living most of the time. Two, many people that don't stick around for maintenance regain. Why do you like what would you attribute regain to in most cases, Katie?
I would attribute it to people thinking that they have to be all in the program for the weight loss in the time that they set up, you know, or signed up, and then going back to their old habits that they, you know, were doing before they implemented the program. So when, you know, we work with someone, they've lost a bunch of weight in, say, 3 months, right? Our shortest session is 3 months. So say they just want to lose 10 pounds in 3 months. They're just, you know, shooting for that number on the scale, 10 pounds, 10 pounds. And then once they get there, they're like, okay, I did it. Now I'm going to go back to how I used to be. And when you don't have that accountability and you're not checking in with a coach and you're not really checking in with yourself, like you see your habits kind of decline that you did when you were in the session, and you'll steadily see the weight change, the weight gain over time. So I think I usually attribute it to going back to the behaviors that led you here in the first place.
Like we talk about the parallels with finances all the time, but it's like, have you guys ever, this is probably way too personal of a question. I'm not going to ask you if you guys have ever had to get out of like credit card or medical debt. Emma and I have, we have really, really come a long way. We got started in life very early. We had a lot of debt that we had to get out from under. Had we gotten out from under the debt and then gone back to the same behaviors and patterns that accrued all the debt, we would have just ended up back in debt, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to live differently. If you became the person that became super mindful about their food, passed on, you know, the appetizer and the dessert, you became the person that cared about their steps, you became the person that joined the gym, and even if you're not going 5 to 6 days a week, you are going 2 to 3 days a week, which is then positively influencing your approach to food. Like, if you reach the finish line, if you get out of debt, if you lose the 20 pounds, and then you just go, I've made it, you will not have made it for long. You are going to go back. Like, you have to stay doing the things. And to our very first point, they have to be on your radar. They don't always have to be getting the same locked in amount of attention. But you're probably going to have to care a whole lot about food. You're probably going to have to keep caring about walking. You're probably going to have to, you know.
Yeah, I mean, it's still some sort of planning. And yeah. I mean, it's kind of like the reference that we just used in the last question as well. You can't just have like a Monday through Friday. I do the program Monday through Friday and then, you know, blow it on the weekends. That didn't come off right. I was trying to like, anyway, but.
Dude, you are doing really good for.
Oh, thank you.
For being.
Jason, during this podcast, I've lost my hearing in the earphones. So we're really
look at, we've got a flat tire. Our third wheel blew off. We're hobbling over to the finish line. Katie, we're almost there. Stay with me.
There was like one point in this podcast that I couldn't hear you. My sound went off and I think I just had a mini heart attack and three white hairs came up, but it's okay. I got it.
You're good. At least yours are changing color. I'm just losing hair. No. So, you know, that was very zoomed out advice. Matthew, like I would probably want more on your context, but the main thing, because the amounts are going to change, right? Like your coach can give you advice how to increase things slowly at the start, and then you can start to progress them. But the main things are you have to stay caring about the things that brought you the success, right?
And yeah, I agree. And Matthew, I think, you know, Jason and I can do a podcast about maintenance and have like a dedicated time for that, where you will get, where we can really, you know, go over, because that is...
would be a really, really good one.
Yeah. And so now we have another topic too.
Yeah. And we can take specific questions. Sometimes you talk so much about the thing.
Yeah.
That you almost like need like nudges. Like, no. I already know that, coach. Thanks. But like, it would be helpful, I think, if we had a list of questions on maintenance.
Yeah.
But essentially, the reasons that I think people don't do well with maintenance is, one, it's very much a new set of things to learn. Try to treat yourself to one session with a coach learning maintenance. And that's not me trying to upsell anyone. That's me not wanting you to be part of the regain statistic. Two, accept that to remain a different person than you were when you hired us, you're going to have to remain doing things a little bit differently. The great news is you're going to be able to eat more in maintenance, especially if you're weight training and moving a lot.
That's such a slippery slope.
Yeah, you're going to have to stay caring. It's the people, not to be mean, but it's when people stop caring that the big regain happens.
And I mean, like, you hear nutrition coaches and dietitians constantly like recommend that you work with someone during maintenance, and we're not just saying that to get more money. It really is implementing this, like, the same habits, different behaviors in a sense that help you like with this new lifestyle. I mean, if there's one thing that I can recommend, is sign up for maintenance after, you know, it doesn't even have to be after you've gotten to your goal weight, quote, goal weight, or where you want to be. Just learning about maintenance can set you up, you know, for success, more so than just like doing a weight loss session and then trying to figure it out on your own, because it's so hard to do.
Yeah. The other thing I would say, and then we're going to wrap.
Yeah.
Anyone that's listening that doesn't quite know what we're talking about when we say maintenance, because it's not even, maybe you're just like a few weeks in, you're just hell-bent on losing. Don't hide from life. Don't try to live your life totally different for the next 3 months or 6 months or year while you're losing, because you just want to lose it faster. If you become the person that posts their streak in Facebook about, I haven't gone out to eat for 4 months because I'm so dedicated.
No,
that's great. And you'll probably get some kudos and accolades from your friends as the coach, as the person that's lost weight. Like, I've been on both sides of it. the more you hide from now while you're working with your coach, the more you're robbing yourself of the chance to learn how to do those things better. They will be there when your time wraps, you know?
I would rather a client lose weight at a slower pace while still, you know, doing the things that they, you know, say if they still want to have their social life, where that does include, you know, alcoholic beverages and going out to eat at some, you know, I wouldn't say what they used to do, but
nightly.
To some degree, yeah. I'd rather you lose at a slower pace than go 12 weeks without, you know, anything and like thinking that you got a gold medal or restricting yourself so much, because really at the end of that, what did you learn? That you can stick to something, you know, that you can restrict yourself. And at the, you know, there will come a time where you're just like, I need to break. Like, this is
crazy. Look at 75 hard. I've never known anyone that did 75 hard one time successfully, and that was it. I know a lot of people that started 75 hard and quit, or the people that did it quote unquote successfully, they've done it a lot more than one times, because it's extreme on and then back to what they were doing.
Exactly.
Okay, I need to reset. Extreme on and back to what, and so they're just ping ponging by design. Don't do that. Don't hide from all of the things that you know are going to be your part of your life afterward. Like,
just don't know how, like, taking a progress picture and like, I forgot all the other, is it a cold shower? Like, I mean,
two workouts a day. One of them has to be outside. Cold showers.
I don't
showers,
know how like that really benefits. All those things like benefit. But
I mean,
again,
just sign up for the military. Podcast. Just go to boot camp, because I think they do about 75 days, and it sounds like that's essentially.
Oh, yeah. You know, Michael will tell you. It's just go to boot camp is right. It's 8 weeks. So, so it's not.
Okay. Well, you need to do 14 hard when you get back from boot camp then to make your 75.
Obviously,
well,
boot camp.
There's our spinoff. It's much more manageable.
Obviously, boot camp
lukewarm
isn't
showers.
Isn't as tough as 75 hard. So you should do.
Yeah. No. I mean, okay. So the cliffs of that sentiment.
Don't do 75.
Don't look for all of the craziness. But at the same time, when you get invited somewhere, go. Like, I would rather, to Katie's point, I'd rather see everyone lose 10 to 15 pounds in 3 months. And feel encouraged that, like, dang, I didn't even have to hide from life, versus losing 30 in 3 months and a couple days shy of 3 months, like literally installing a countdown app so you could count until your time is done. So you could go to Golden Corral with a six pack on the way and just totally reintroduce everything that you've been craving so badly.
Exactly. Like, because at the end, we want you to learn something, and that's not, you're not learning anything when you do that.
Yeah. We both say it, be the B plus student. You don't need to be A plus.
No need to be A plus.
All right. I think that's it. Maintenance next time. We will take questions from the group. Yeah. I know that it is Friday, and I know the uncomfortableness is probably starting to grow more and more. So I really do appreciate you being here with me, Katie. Thank you.
Oh, of course. Thanks for having me. It's always a fun time. And, you know, I really hope that me not having earphones, you don't hear this.
Like my knockoff. These aren't even like the real Apple ones. These are like the $5 ones. So I'm pretty sure our audio quality on here is going to be. You sound great on my end, for what it's worth.
Thank God. There's like this fan from my computer that's been going off. And like I said, there was a part in when you were talking that like you just went. I just couldn't hear anything. So, you know, I really hope
we'll be all right. We're like the little engine that could podcast. I think we're all right.
Yeah.
All right. We'll talk to you next time. And
thanks for listening.
Yeah. Thank you, guys. Signing out.
Bye.
All right. So that's a wrap. Thank you so much for listening to Fed Up from Falcon Nutrition. We hope you learned a thing or two, or at worst, had a little fun with us. Please make sure you subscribe to stay up to date with our most recent episodes, and make sure you hit us up if we can answer any questions for you. Talk to you next time.